And a good Friday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hope everybody's having a good start to your day. Should be a beautiful day outside. Should be nice and warm and sunny as we wrap up another week here on the show. Darren McFarland, that is me down here in Rutherford County in Smyrna. Willie Donick over at East Nashville is off today. He's down in Atlanta, and he'll be back on Monday, and Chase McCabe holding fort over on the west side of town in Bellevue, while Marquise Munson is back at the Wholesale Inc. Game Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. So we are inching ever so closely to basically everything coming by back but one sport.
Yeah, which one
and
is that, Darren?
I just can't believe that we're still sitting here having the same conversation. I talked to someone who was in the baseball business around baseball players and Major League Baseball, and they honestly don't know. They want to believe they're going to get this worked out, which is a pretty scary thing. And this is somebody that I trust a lot, their info. And they want to believe. They just are not sure. They're really not sure. They're not sure if they're truly going to get this worked out. And he told me, he said, probably the best case scenario right now is coming back and playing about 62 games. 62-game regular season. But right now, the PA is saying, we're going to stand firm.
Yeah.
We're rejecting and we're standing firm, and got to be honest, I don't know where this is going. That same person also told me if baseball doesn't figure this out, it'll be worse than 94. That's what he told me, his opinion.
I think that's spot on. That's consistent with what we have been saying on this show.
Yep.
That it's going to be very, very hard for them to come back from this. Now, I mean, they could, but think about it too. In 94, you had that. You had the strike. You had the start of the 95 season delayed. And it took them a while, and it took a home run race, which we would later find out was tainted, to bring them out of it. Well, they're probably not going to have that again because they're just coming off another huge scandal, and now this. So, I mean, that's one positive in all of this is people have kind of forgotten about the Astros right now. Now, that'll probably come back up at some point, but now everybody's just mad at baseball and the players for not figuring this out when all the other sports have gotten their – return to play scenarios going. So, but yeah, I'm with you. Ryan and I kind of had a poll question yesterday of if the season is completely canceled because of this dispute, will it change how you view baseball? Will you still be a fan? And, you know, I think most people were like, I may watch a little less, but I don't really know. And I was honest. I said, you know, I watch the Braves when they're good or when they're bad. I think at first I would probably be ticked off and annoyed, so I would step back. But as I got word that, hey, my team's still good, it'd probably draw me back in, if I'm just being completely honest. So that's just me, though. How would it affect attendance? That's where I think the hit would be. It wouldn't be necessarily watching on TV. It would be attendance. You know, would people go and spend their money and go to a game? Now, that would probably change for me. I wouldn't go as much.
I mean, right now, Major League Baseball has got a bad look on so many fronts. I mean, one, we're in the middle of a global pandemic. They're fighting. They're squabbling over money. Two, everybody else has figured it out. And, you know, those are two gigantic strikes, right? You're fighting over money while millions upon millions upon millions upon millions of people are out of jobs or taking salary reductions or being furloughed. And, oh, by the way, their lives have been turned upside down because of what's going on. And you're fighting over money. And then everybody else has figured it out around you. I mean, NASCAR just extended their schedule. It just continues to come out. And so far it's working what they're doing. We know the plan for NHL. We certainly got into some good conversation with Elliot Freeman yesterday about NHL's plan, where it is going to be once they get to basically there's 16 teams in their regular Stanley Cup playoffs format. It's going to look like we've always seen it, minus fans. It's going to be a seven-game series. But they are going to reseed. The qualifying round will be a five-game series. But they figured it out, and kudos to NHL. They were the first, really. MLS, luckily, avoided a lockout yesterday or the day before in the last 24 or 48 hours. It looks like they're going to be back. The NBA unveiled their plan yesterday in Orlando for 22 teams. They're coming back. They figured it out. And here sits Major League Baseball, who hasn't had one pitch, one out recorded, hasn't seen anything in their regular season in 2020. And yet, I don't know what the gap is currently right now, because you have a stare off, and I don't know if anybody's going to budge or not. Like I said, I spoke to somebody that covers the sport, covers a team, gets paid by the sport, gets paid by a team, knows the sport inside out, and has a whole lot of contacts and has a whole lot of information. He told his family, I don't know if we're what to do about vacation. I guess we better go right now. I don't know. We may have all summer to vacation. But, you know, he said, I truly don't know. He wants to believe that they're going to come back. He wants to believe that they're going to figure this out. He wants to believe that they're going to understand that this is going to be really, really, really bad for the sport. But he's also not sure. And that's scary to me, because I know who I know he talks to people who knows things that are in those circles, a lot more more qualified people to speak on the sport than me and the people that I talk to. And when he's saying that, that's not good. It's not good at all. And like I said, he really felt like the best case scenario would be like 62 games,
which how would people react to that? Because they would know the reason why. I'm like I said, it's one thing to sit and watch it on TV, but to actually, in this market, to drive to Atlanta or Cincinnati or St. Louis, are you willing to spend the money on gas, to spend the money on a hotel, to spend the money on tickets, to make that trip to go and support a team and a sport and players that got into a public you-know-what contest over money during a pandemic? That's where I think it's going to really, really hurt, because I know that I'm going to look at it, even though I might turn the TV on and watch a few innings. Like, do I really want to do that? Because I mean, that's an investment. You're going to spend a good chunk of change to make that trip. Now, in the market, I'd also be curious. Season ticket holders, do they give up their season tickets? Do you have people that buy those, game plans, whether it's 12 or 20 or whatever? Are they going to spend that kind of money? I think they take a hit with that because of this. Even at 62 games, I think they're going to hurt from it. If they get 62 or 50 or whatever the number is, but because it's going to just rub people the wrong way. They're going to look at it and go, you know what? I was on unemployment for 6 months, and I'm not going to spend my money on this sport when you guys were sitting there complaining and arguing over money.
I lost my job, or I lost my business. You think those people are going to support baseball?
No.
I lost my business.
No. And either they don't get it or they don't want to get it. And it's probably they ignore it and like, hey, let's just tunnel vision and focus on this. I mean,
sounds like they also don't have a Tom Glavin in that room. And that was a game night you did several weeks ago. And we've had people like Richard Justice and Tim Kirchen and others on that have said how vitally important to have a Tom Glavin type in that room. And it sounds like this room right now with Tony Clark and these players doesn't have that Tom Glavin guy.
Well, and think about some of the other, not just Tom Glavin, because he was right in the middle of it, and that's why he was so important. But think about some of the other veteran players that have retired in recent years. Do you think that this happens if there's a Mariano Rivera or a Derek Jeter involved? If there's a Jim Thome or Chipper Jones, some of these players that have stepped away from the game in the last 5 to 10 years. And I don't necessarily mean that as a slight to some of the top veteran leaders in the sport today, but they're in this situation right now. And I look at some of those guys that I just named, including Tom Glavine, and say they don't let it get this far because they know what could happen. They know the results of it. It doesn't get this far, and they sit down and they have a conversation and they figure this out. Because as you have brought up, and you have said this multiple times this week, the owners, they're fine. They'll be fine. They'll just, all right, okay. You don't want to play? Sure. We'll take the year off. We'll be okay. It'll hurt, but we'll get it back. That's how they look at it.
But, well, I don't think they're set to make very much. I mean, I think it's
they're going to operate
almost
at a loss.
Right. I was going to say, it's not really even beneficial to them as a business. In fact, I was reading what Tom Ricketts said, owner of the Cubs, and said the league itself does not make a lot of cash. He said, I think there's a perception out there that we hoard cash and we take money out and it's all sitting in a pile that we've collected over the years. Well, it isn't, because no one anticipated a pandemic. And I've said this before. They are businessmen. They are not. Some of them may be fans, but overall, they are businessmen, and they're going to do what's best for their business. And quite honestly, this season isn't even shaping up to be good for business.
Mm-hmm.
And if these players aren't going to do it the right way, these owners are going to walk away. I've been saying this for weeks and weeks and weeks.
You have.
And the owners will just say, fine, okay, we'll shut it down then. You want to be like that? We won't play. And we're billionaires, so we'll be just fine. I mean, and that's exactly what's playing out. They're not going. I do not believe they're going to budge.
I don't either.
Why would they? Why would they operate at a loss? Why do they owe it to the players to operate at a loss?
I guess they don't. But then
give me the businesses that owners say, you know what, for the betterment of everything, hey, we're just going to operate at a loss just because.
This is also a unique situation. I mean, you're going to have NHL and NBA owners that operate. I mean, and they did have part of their season, so they at least have that, but nobody's getting rich through this. So I know it's a little bit different there, but
it's actually a lot. The NHL basically played their entire regular season for the most part.
But they're still losing. I mean, they're going to lose money, and that's something that's going to affect them years down the road. But they also know that getting back was, you know, trying to recoup some of it, and also it was just what they needed to do. I think there was some of that, too.
I mean, I'll say the same thing to these players as I would have said to Le'Veon Bell, which I was very vocal about, and said I did not agree with what he did. And it's just my opinion, but you can't make – no matter what was going to happen after he sat out a year, you don't get to make up the $14 million. You just lost $14 million. So you don't – there's no way to make that up. I'll say the same thing to the players. You're not going to make up this season if you don't play. You're not going to get that money back. It's gone. So you're going to operate for free this year in 2020. Your calendar year, you will be free. I mean – you don't get to make it up. So what advantage is there to being like this? Because if you don't have a season, you as a player cannot recoup that. And for people like Caleb Joseph, you think Caleb Joseph's the only one? You remember the conversation
Sure. We
just had with him? Not only does he not get that salary for 2020, which he has a family, this may be it for him. And there's a whole lot of those guys out there, a whole lot of those guys. They're not all Bryce Harpers. They're not all making, you know, they all don't have $200 and $300 million contracts like Mike Trout and those guys. Think about Mookie Betts. Mookie Betts still hasn't secured that big long-term deal. So guess what? This year is set to cost him, what was he set to make, $27 million? Is that right?
That sounds right. Let's see. Somewhere, I know it's above 27, yep.
$27 million, okay. Not getting that back. And a player's not getting that back. And I know he's not going to make $27 million. I get that. He's still not. But, I mean, whatever he is set to make under the rule, the guidelines, whatever they would agree to, he's not getting that back. He's not going to. By the way, he's building a big house on Franklin. He's not getting that back. Donald is on hold. He wants to weigh in. What's up?
Hey, man. I have a comment about, I think everybody's getting it twisted. Everybody wants the players to fold. Why should the players fold when that's who the fans are coming to see? The owners should be the ones that fold. The players are the ones out there every day putting it on the line. That's who we as fans come to see. We don't go see the owners. So why do the players got to sacrifice their money and what they're set to make when these billionaires are the ones sitting back collecting off the players' backs? They should be the ones to fold, not the players.
Yeah, but the owners are also the ones that put the risk out there. They're the ones who own the business. They're the ones that have to do – all the players have to do is show up and play a game. The owners have all kinds of responsibilities. Their risk is on the line every day. They created that franchise. They own it.
Yeah, you have that correct. But without the players, the owners, the franchise will be absolutely nothing.
Right.
That's what people come to see.
But they're not going to operate at a loss. They don't owe the league or owe us to operate at a loss and just let the players get their money and they get nothing. Why does that make any sense for them?
And why do the players owe that to anybody to take the loss and they have to fold and come out there and play a game to make someone else money?
Donald, when is it ever going to change and when has it ever been different that fans come out to see players? Since sports has been up and going for hundreds of for over 100 years, it's always been about the players. Nothing's changed.
That's what I'm saying. So, but
and nothing will ever change.
You guys are making it seem as if the players should be the one to fold, though. Like the players are wrong for standing their ground when they want their money to feed their family. These billionaire owners are okay. They're straight. These players aren't. But these players go out there and get hurt and get a career-ending injury, then they're going to be screwed anyway. And the owners are still going to be okay. The business is going to keep going.
So that'd be even more reason to get out there and play, right? You have a short window to make your money. Short.
Yeah.
And then you're back out in the real world like the rest of us, Donald. Mm-hmm. Me,
yeah,
you, and
right.
Chase. The real world's not as much fun as playing baseball, making millions.
Well, tell them I'll go play.
Thanks for the phone call.
Thanks, sir.
I know Donald's joking there, Darren, but could you see it getting to that at some point? Maybe not this year because of what you were just saying, because they'd be operating at a loss, so what does it matter? But, you know, how long does this go? Does this go on beyond this year? They scrapped this season. It's a wash. I mean, obviously there's going to be more negotiations because it's going to change the business model. It's going to change baseball. So does this get into another situation where there's a lockout or a strike or what have you, and then you have – like, okay, well, we'll go find some people that'll play. Or there'll be people that'll play. If you guys want to sit and hold your ground, we'll go find some players. Does it get to that eventually?
No, I don't think so. I just think that they're prepared just to walk away and say, fine, we won't have a season. I think that are you saying bring in scab players?
Yeah, and not
yeah,
so
I don't,
much.
I don't see that.
Not so much this year because, as you've been saying, I mean, the owners are like, hey, we're fine not playing because we're going to operate at a loss, so let's just take our losses and go home at this point. But, yeah, I will say this. Neither side looks good right now. You can take sides or you can say which one's worse, which one's better. But they in the middle of a pandemic with so many people suffering and losing their jobs and businesses, neither side really looks great right now.
We will come back, and there's been a huge announcement in the last 48 hours in our market. And if you missed our interview with Mike Titoyan, who is the president and CEO of Dover International Speedway, they own the Nashville Super Speedway. There's a cup race coming to our city in the next year or so. In fact, you're going to hear in this interview that we caught up with him later in the show yesterday. There's a lot of particulars he's going to lay out that you're going to want to hear. What is their future here? How long do they want to be here? How long? What is the plan? What were their conversations with NASCAR? How did this all come about? This is all going to get laid out on the other side with Mike Titoyan, who is the president and CEO of Dover International Speedway. You will hear that next on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. And online with us right now is Mike Titoyan. He is the president and CEO of Dover International Speedway, and we know that's who owns the Nashville Super Speedway. Mike, thanks for joining us.
Oh, it's awesome. Thank you for having me on. It's great to join you guys and your listeners.
Well, as you can imagine, Mike, we have been very excited in this market for the last 24 hours because while there's been a lot of talk of possibly a return of NASCAR to Nashville, it's been more centered around the fairgrounds location. And for this news to come out, I mean, we didn't even really consider the Nashville Super Speedway. So, one, didn't think announcement was coming that quickly. And two, We definitely weren't talking about the location. How did all this happen?
Yeah, no, great. Well, little history, I guess, just to bring everybody up to speed. We actually built Nashville Super Speedway back about 20 years ago, and we built it to be Cup ready in anticipation of someday we would be hosting the Cup Series there. Now we didn't realize that we were going to be on a 20 or 21 year business plan. We certainly had hoped to bring a Cup race sooner than that, but as a result of the economy and just the economics of what we're going through at the Speedway, we shuttered the operations down in 2011. And then fast forward all the way to December, this past December, when we were in your fine city, we held the Champions Week in Nashville. And it was an amazing experience for our entire industry to be in the city, and the industry was embraced as I think we all had hoped and expected we would be. But it was very rarely in our industry can we get everybody to agree on anything. But that particular week in Nashville, everybody had an amazing time. And so that's when NASCAR, the leadership, had approached us about the possibility if we would consider moving one of our Dover races to, because right now we have two. We have a spring and a fall race in Dover. If we would consider moving one of our races to Nashville. And we have had a great relationship. We've been in the sport for over 50 years. So they know us well. We know them very well. And at that point, it was really just a terrific collaboration at their request. And as you guys know, change was needed or is needed on the NASCAR schedule. We've heard from fans, certainly our broadcast partners, that a more dynamic schedule change was needed. And Nashville, of all the things that we talked about in NASCAR's priorities as to what they need to accomplish, Nashville was their number one priority. As a result of us having a facility that is not quite Cup ready because it's been sitting dormant for the last 10 years, the best way to get there is for us to move one of our races to Nashville. And as you were just saying, in a year or so, we're going to be rocking and rolling out at Nashville Super Speedway. So we are super excited to be coming back and being reunited with your city.
Well, you said a lot of truths there for sure. One, and no matter what the subject matter is, you're right. It's damn near impossible to get anybody and everybody on the same page, no matter what you're talking about. Right. And two, right. It was very clear to us, Mike, because we did our show, I think it was on a Wednesday, there at the Music City Center around that awards banquet, and we had drivers, come through there, sit down at the table with us. Mike Helton came over and sat down at the tables. I mean, we talked to the who's who, anybody and everybody in the sport for basically 4 hours on our show that day, and it was abundantly clear that Nashville was a high, high priority for NASCAR.
Yeah, and you certainly were talking to the right guys, and Mike Helton, Steve Phelps, the president, Steve O'Donnell, who's the chief racing development officer for the sport, and Ben Kennedy. Those are the guys that we had the primary conversations with, and they're just terrific guys. And you found that out when you were able to spend some time with them, along with the drivers. And it's just such a great marriage, our sport and your community. And we saw that 20 some odd years ago, and we spent actually back then a little over $100 million building that facility. And I don't know what that equates to in current dollars, but it was a significant investment at the time. And like I said, Harvard's probably not going to use our 21-year business plan as something someone should follow, but we find ourselves in the situation that we're in. And it punctuated what I think everybody has felt for such a long time, that Nashville is absolutely the right place to be. And so we're looking forward to it.
Mike Titoyan on the line with us, president and CEO of Dover International Speedway. Dover owns the Nashville Super Speedway. And, Mike, you're talking to somebody that was out there for every race for a decade. And I was doing a pre-race, a two-, three-hour pre-race show before every – whether it was open wheel, it didn't matter what it was, what the event. I was out there, and to be quite honest, if we could backtrack a little bit, so I know the lay of the land and I know the history out there. It was I would say 4 years ago, I guess. I remember us having the president and CEO of another company. I can't even think of the name of the company on the show to say that they were buying, you know, that piece of land. And, of course, it never happened. And that story just kind of went dormant for a long time. And to be perfectly honest, full disclosure, I wasn't even sure you guys still owned the place when the news came out. What happened with that possible sale, if you don't mind?
Yeah, no, sure. Well, we closed down. It was July of 2011 is when we had held our last race there. And we, whether it was fortuitous or not, we felt at that time that we just weren't going to get the opportunity to bring a cup race to Nashville. And so we had partnered with a development group, and we owned 1,400 acres. It's a great property, as you now know, or as you know. We've sold about 300 acres to a great partner of ours, but which will not have any impact on what we're doing operationally with hosting a Cup Series race. And about 4 years ago, there was an offer that was made to purchase, and we're not on it. Full disclosure, we're not exactly sure what they were planning on doing with the property, other than we had negotiated a price at that time to sell the property to them. That fell through. It was an interesting or kind of a strange ending or transaction, or I guess a non-transaction. And at the same time, we always wanted to preserve the track and the property around the track, because it was kind of like, you just never know what may happen in the future. And so that fell away by the wayside. We still obviously own the property. And this opportunity came up back in December at NASCAR's request. And so we call it good fortune or fortuitous or lucky or good guessing. We certainly have enough property to put on an amazing race weekend, which these days, as you guys know, being as close as you are in sports, sports in general has changed in the sense that the fans have become more discerning with what else. Let me take a step back. The basic premise of our sport is NASCAR, our sanctioning body, is responsible for the product that goes on the track. And while you guys and me and our fans have our own opinion about it, they are the subject matter experts. Everything else surrounding the track is our responsibility. So the entertainment that we provide off the track is critically important to us and our fans as it is the entertainment that they see on the track. And so it's akin to your Nashville Sounds. The Texas Rangers, I think it's a Texas Rangers affiliate. Mm-hmm. They're responsible for the players, the field manager, everything that happens in between the white lines. That's their responsibility. The Nashville Sound staff, the reason why it's so fun to go to a game, unfortunately not yet this year, but it is all the entertainment surrounding it. And together, it creates an amazing memory for families and fans to attend. And that's what we need to recreate at the Super Speedway.
When we first heard the news, we were excited and we thought, is this a one-off? Is this a one-year deal, a one-off deal? And then we would later learn that it's a four-year deal. How did you come to that? What ultimately is your goal? Is it to be here long-term again, Mike? Is it let's reassess after maybe year three? What's kind of your game plan coming back into this in Nashville?
Yeah, so it's a 4 year. The document that tracks and the NASCAR, the sanctioning body, signs, it's something called the sanction agreement. And that sanction agreement is really the legal document, if you will, that marries you to each other. And so we have we're a publicly traded company. So it was important for us and obviously any of our shareholders to make sure that if we're going to go into give up a race in Dover, a profitable race in Dover, and we're gonna move a race to Nashville and make the kind of investment in time, in energy, in human capital, and real capital, real money. We needed some assurance from our partners, NASCAR, that we were going to be able to get a return on that investment with that agreement. And that's really why it's a four-year agreement, the assurance that we will be there for 4 years. However, our plan, and by the way, moving forward, those sanction agreements in the past have typically been one-year sanction agreements. And so as we move forward, we just needed that insurance. Otherwise, as smart as we think we were of holding on the property, we'd be complete idiots if we did what we're about to do with only the assurance of 1 year for a cup race. Our plan is to be there for a long, long time. 4 years was just something that our partners at NASCAR was, we were really pleased and happy that they were to do something that they otherwise wouldn't have done, but they understood our situation. But our plan is to reinvest in the property and be there for a long period of time. And so while the sanction agreement is 4 years, our plan is certainly to be there much longer than that.
Mike Detoyan is with us, the president and CEO of Dover International Speedway, the owners of the Nashville Super Speedway. So we know that with it sitting there, as you brought up, that there are going to have to be some things done to the facility. When do you think that process will begin, and what all needs to be done, or do you even have those answers yet?
Yeah, well, we have 378 days about to make sure whatever needs to be done better be done. Otherwise, it'll be the last time you'll ever talk to me in your life, because I'll be doing something else. So to that end, we actually are going to pile a bunch of people and get to the Super Speedway the week of the 15th of this month. Obviously, we have assessed the situation earlier than this in anticipation of the announcement that we made yesterday. But we have to get started now. The good news is when it was built, we were anticipating that someday we would host a cup race. So we built it, as you know, because you've been there, that, you know, it's not ready for prime time right now. There are some things that, look, it's like going to an old house. And, you know, once you start flushing the toilets and turning on the lights and seeing if the AC works, that's kind of what we need to be doing now. And there are some things to the track that we got to make sure is a safe environment with safer barrier to make sure that our competitors are safe when they compete. And so, and you know what, think about any stadium, think about the arena that you guys go to, think about the football stadium. So much has changed from the fans' enjoyment or comforts or expectations than, I mean, think of anything from 10 years ago in sports. It's just not the same venue. It's not the same experience. It can't be. And so those are the things, you know, you expect your Wi-Fi to work when you go to a sporting event, right? A fan expects that. And that has just become a typical fan amenity. And so those are the things that we need to look for as well, that just television networks, the way the TV compounds. So a lot of the technology has changed. And so those are the things that we're really going to be paying attention to. And we believe that all hands on deck, we certainly will be ready when the green flag drops.
We know this is going to be the Cup Series, but typically we see race weekends. So is it safe to say the Xfinity Series and maybe the Truck Series will be a part of this race weekend?
Yeah, we certainly hope so. You know, typically we would have seen the NASCAR schedule. The following year's schedule typically would come out in April, but because of the awful pandemic that we're all suffering from, that has just been delayed. And as you guys know, we're, as a sport, just trying to make the best of what we have available to us to get, as you guys know, we got cars back on the track a few weeks ago, to get our sport cranking again. And so there's just been a delay from a scheduling perspective, and that's why our Nashville date is just extremely tentative, because our television, our broadcast partners, the industry has just been so preoccupied with the challenges that everyone is faced with, not just in sports, but just everyone is faced with. We likely won't get confirmation on Truck and Xfinity and our confirmed dates, you know, for another, gosh, I'd be guessing, but another couple of months or so. But we, to your point, we would love to have, right now in Dover, we do run a triple header where we run Trucks on Friday, Xfinity on Saturday, and Cup Series on Sunday. We'd love to replicate that in Nashville if we're given the opportunity, and I think we will be.
Mike, as you mentioned earlier, a lot of things have changed in the last 10 years since racing was out there, and that includes the racing itself. We've seen NASCAR, you mentioned Steve O'Donnell, put an emphasis on the product on the track, making the cars not only safer but more competitive. There's been the introduction of the PJ1 traction compound that helps a lot with the side-by-side racing. And NASCAR is getting a lot of new fans. That's what they want to see. They want to see passing. They want to see side-by-side racing. So I bring that up to address the track itself and maybe some, you know, are there going to be changes to the actual racing surface or the track itself to help with that and how things, the cars, how the racing has changed over the years?
Yeah, that's an excellent observation. We have it's a concrete track, which is a rarity. It will be the largest concrete track on the circuit next year, and we certainly rely on the NASCAR executives and their engineering teams to put on the best show that they can. And you'd mentioned PJ1, which, for the benefit of your listeners, is just like kind of sticky stuff that you would put on your track. And so those are the things. And not next year, but the year after, there will be a new car, new generation car coming out. And so I think it's interesting in our sport where you go from track to track. It is literally science as to how you approach the track that you're going to and how do the team set up for it to be as competitive, but also exciting, as you said, side-by-side racing, a lot of passing, a lot of action on the track. And so racing at Nashville Super Speedway is much different than racing at Bristol or is much different than racing at Talladega, which I think is kind of fun for our fans or new fans that are coming to the sport, that there's the way the cars are set up. It really is a lot of science that's put into it, more than just a bunch of cars turning left and going fast. And so we do rely. Look, I'm the last guy to talk to about the technical aspects of motorsports. I came up as a promoter. I came up through minor league baseball, and so I lived that life for a long time where you don't rely on necessarily the athletes or the play. It's all about the promotional part of it. And so we rely on the NASCAR guys to put on the best product possible. This is a really important market for us. We want to perform both on and off the track. So I know that when we get to Nashville next year, NASCAR is going to put on the absolute best product they can to create the kind of excitement that I think our fans expect and should expect.
Mike, as we wrap this up, I think the statute of limitations may be up, so it's time for me to come clean with Dover International. Probably 2008, we were doing a radio show out there at the Nashville Super Speedway, and when the show wrapped up, no one was around, and I mean no one. I think we were the only people at the track, and I may or may not have, well, if I'm telling you, I may have taken my car around the track for a couple of laps. So it's time for me just to get that burden off of me. I think enough time has passed, but I'm coming clean with you, and I hope it doesn't affect our relationship moving forward.
So you're the guy who did that. We've been looking for you.
Well, I just thought I'll never get this chance again, and I'm going to do it, and I did it.
No, you know what? You know what? Here's my promise to you. You'll get another chance. I
oh, really? Okay.
Once we get the thing ready to go, we're going to give you a golf cart, and you're going to go crazy.
I like it. Hey, really appreciate the visit. We are really, really excited here in this market. This has been great news for the last 24 hours. Thanks for doing this, and we look forward to meeting you in person sooner rather than later. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thank you. We appreciate it. I look forward to being on with you guys again, and just look forward to being in your city for a long time to come. So thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mike. That is Mike Titoyan, who is the president and CEO of Dover International Speedway. We will come back. More of Darren, Donick, and Chase on the other side, ESPN 102.5 The Game. I've got something to say, too. There's a lot of local businesses here in Middle Tennessee that are now open and ready to serve you. During these times, you can help them out by visiting rocknashville.com. That's rocknashville.com for delivery, / pickup options, fitness ideas, virtual entertainment, and much, much more. We've got this Nashville support your local businesses. A very good message here on Darren, Donick, and Chase. Once again,
perfect too. Rock Nashville, Rock of Ages.
I know.
That worked together.
That was like a perfect little blend there coming out of the break. Mike Titoyan. You just heard the president and CEO of Dover International Speedway, and we do appreciate him joining us. That was really good stuff out of him, and we're looking forward to continuing those conversations with him down the road as we get closer to that event about a year from now in our city. Alan Bell from Sportsline will join us to kick off the second hour of the program. You just made the list at high noon. Kevin Weeks, you're going to want to hear this, NHL Network. At 12:30. We're looking forward to that and a little Friday trivia in the final hour of the program. So those are things on tap for today's program. Speaking of attendance, Okay, we've talked about the grandstand, and they believe it holds around 25,000 seat capacity. You heard us talking about that with Mike. You've uncovered some stuff. You've got a little interesting note on attendance at the Super Speedway.
Yeah, I did. So there's a website that I use a lot for racing info, jski.com. Been around for a very long time for NASCAR info, and they got this, I guess, from NBC Sports. But Dover's a publicly traded company, so they have to
Mike said in that interview.
Mm-hmm. Right, so they have to make documents available. So you can get information. Now, ISC or SMI, they're private, so they don't have to make documents available. But the sanctioning agreement between Dover and NASCAR was made available, and one thing that has been uncovered with that is a minimum attendance clause for Dover and Nashville in 2021. It states, quote, promoter will use best efforts to ensure a minimum spectator attendance in grandstand seating during the NASCAR Cup race portion of the competition of at least 70% capacity of the facility. Now it goes on to say this isn't 70% of all of a track seats, but 70% of all seats that are available and not covered by signs or banners. So basically they're saying we need 70% of any seats you have available in the grandstands. We need at least 70% of those full. And that's a part of their agreement, their sanctioning agreement. I found that to be interesting.
What do you find interesting about that?
Well, because it's basically NASCAR's way of saying, you know, we can't have, because Dover has had an attendance issue. Mm-hmm. I'm not really worried about Nashville.
Yeah, I was going to say, does that really apply here? I mean, look, if this market can't sell out a cup race, then it doesn't belong here anyway. I mean, you know, NASCAR needs to pick up and leave again for good. I mean, if we can't sell out a cup race in this market, you know, we have all the data. We've seen the TV ratings. We've seen the data here. It works in this market. And now we're talking about something we've been craving for 37 years. Chase, if we can't sell it out, you know, unless Dover gets crazy, which they're not, and goes stands all the way around the track, which they're not. But if they don't sell it out, I mean, it doesn't belong here anyway. That's the way I look at it.
Yeah, and you're seeing so many tracks now that are laid out like Nashville that you basically have everything on the front stretch. You don't have backstretch seating anymore. I mean, Talladega, which I'm going to tell you, Darren, I don't know if you ever sat on the backstretch at Talladega, but that was fun.
I sat on the front.
It was a party, and they took those seats out. I mean, I was really sad to see that, but it was a part of the new business model that NASCAR had. We've been to Daytona a couple of times, and we knew that they had backstretch seats there. They took those out. They reduced capacity at the Daytona International Speedway. So,
by about 60,000.
Yeah.
Just think about that. 60,000, which probably won't even be the maximum attendance at Nashville. I doubt they even build 60,000 seats.
Not yet.
Yeah.
Not yet. But
I'd say it'll probably be a 50 is a good number.
I think that's a fine number. And if you sell that out a couple years in a row, then okay, talk about it. But,
yeah.
You know, you also have to look and see what happens with the fairgrounds, because as I've tried to say, you know, on these airwaves, that's not dead. And all indications are NASCAR wouldn't hate the idea of having two races in this market, even if it's at two different tracks. So, you know, that could factor in as well. I mean, are you going to have people that go to both? Yes, absolutely. You're going to hit. There is such a hunger for racing in this market that I don't think that'll be a problem. But for Dover, this is interesting, because that's one of the reasons why they're losing a race. Because the attendance hasn't been great there the last few years. And, you know, I don't love the racing there. Concrete surface, that adds some things. It's basically a mile long Bristol is kind of what it is. But you don't get everybody so close together like you do at Bristol. The PJ1 has helped the racing there, but it's definitely not what it has been in the past, so that they've struggled with some attendance there. But I just thought the attendance clause was an interesting note to pass along. Talked to Ryan Newman today on the rundown, and that'll be a part of Chasing Checkers as well. But he very excited to come to Nashville. He's looking for a fishing hole to have when he's here for that race weekend. But he thinks it's awesome that NASCAR is getting back in this market. And they all saw the success of the banquet last fall or last winter. So he's excited about it, and I know a lot of the drivers are too. So that's good. It's a good sign.
It's all good. And if you don't understand that and you live here, especially if you're in this business and you don't understand how this is good for the market, I don't understand you. For anybody that would, you know, especially do what we do or you care about this city and – you know, anytime something is brought here and you go, is this a good idea for Nashville? Or is this a really good idea? I mean, you just sound like an idiot. You honestly do. You sound like an idiot. Well, how could it be a bad thing? But what possibly could be bad about it? Should we be excited about this? Is this a good thing? You sound like a moron when you do that. I mean, it's just unbelievable to hear that. I mean, if you live here, how could it be? If it doesn't interest you, that's fine. I mean, okay, but to say, is this a good thing? Should we be excited? How is it a bad thing? Oh, because it's something you don't follow? So you're questioning whether this is a good idea or not? Oh, so you're only interested in the things that you follow. Well, that's a great approach. That's fantastic. That goes over really well. Glad you're not running a market. Yeah, I'm only interested in the things that I'm interested in, nothing else. Not for the betterment of the market that I'm in.
Which is one great of the stance. Problems with today.
Great stance. Tell you what. I'm all for what's good for this city. I've said it many times. I'm not a huge soccer fan at all. I'm willing to learn. If you care, I care. That's what matters to me. If you care, I care. If this market cares, I care. I don't have to like... Before MLS here, have you ever heard me proclaim to be some huge soccer fan? No.
No.
Absolutely not. And I still am not today.
But you learn.
But I'll learn. And like I said, if you care, I'll care. If this is a huge hit in this market, you bet we're going to cover it. We already are. And I know that you know, I'm happy that they're on this station. But, you know, when this announcement came out, you know, especially if you're in this business – and you are saying, is this a good thing for Nashville? Should we care? I mean, you just sound like an idiot. I mean, I honestly don't know how – I can't sugarcoat it anymore. It's just – it's baffling to hear that. You should root for this market. You should root for the place that you live. It's never a bad thing when something good is coming. And like I said, if it doesn't sell out, Chase, and it's not a good thing, then they need to pick up and move and never come back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't think that's going to be the case. Even though, you know, and the thing that I ran into when on social media, because I was talking about it, I love the fairgrounds too. I want to be back at the fairgrounds as well, as much as anybody. I get that. Short track racing, it's fun. That's the roots. I get it. But they're here. So don't sit here and type out a tweet saying, well, the racing's not going to be great out there. I just wish they were going to the fairgrounds. This isn't going to work. This could be bad. Why hit positive news with a negative like that? Yes, they do need to work on the racing product. That's why I brought that up with Mike Titoyan. I brought that up with Ryan Newman. Ryan Newman gave a political answer of, NASCAR's got time to figure that out, but things have changed a lot in the last 10 years. It's a different race car. They have the traction compound. They are going to work on it. But don't just sit there and take what you have from the past, from 10 years ago, and just automatically assume that it's going to be bad this time around. I mean, Chase Elliott is another one of those. Like, dude, you're one of the best drivers in the sport. I don't need you sending a tweet saying one snooze fest at that place kills it for the fairgrounds, because that's not necessarily true. They're two separate deals, but you got to give it a chance. It hadn't even happened yet. That's just kind of how I look at it. So, and I admit, you and I both have said it. Yeah, the racing wasn't always great out there. There are things in place that they can try to do to make it better, and they're going to do that. This is a thing that's happening, and it's good for our city.
Luke Kuechly says that he is going to stay with the Carolina Panthers in a front office role. That is a good segue to kick off hour number two, as we'll bring in Alan Bell from Sportsline and CBS Sports on the other side of Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.